Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to tonight's Friday Night Speakeasy, where it's all whiskey and rhyme. We are featuring some rhyming poetry tonight, which is not my comfort zone, so good luck with that. But other people do it fabulously, so I'm hoping to hear some magic tonight. I am Pretty Bird. I am co-hosting with Raconteur. Say hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
And we are a team of voices. Here on Blog Talk Radio. You can find us on allpoetry.com. It is free to join. It is the largest online poetry site. And when you go there, just look us up. We are a team of voices. We have radio shows that cover all kinds of topics and forms and fabulousness by all types of wonderful people. So if you like what you hear, feel free to check us out. And we are a group that is sponsored by our very own AP Taylor, who is here tonight with us. Say hello, hello.
Hi, Pretty Bird.
Hi. So that was Time After Time by Cyndi Lauper. I love that song. That song holds a lot of nostalgia for me. It was written in 1983 at the tail end of her album, She's So Unusual. And she started writing it after flipping through the TV guide. And there's a sci-fi film called Time After Time. And, I mean, it just goes to show you inspiration comes from anywhere. And it was her first number one hit. So enough musical trivia. Let's get
Pretty Bird.
Yes, love.
I was going to interrupt. Who do you know who the male singer was on that song?
That was Rob Hyman, who helped co-write the song.
Ah, well done you.
No, well done Google, but thank you.
And for those of us who don't know Rob Hyman, he was from the Hooters.
Yes, and you know what? I actually did know that because I was a big Hooters fan back in the day when they toured with Lover Boy. So it was like a 2-for-1 fabulous concert.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not old. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. No, not at all.
I used to love. I mean, I lived for concerts. I worked for concert tickets. Like I would just, everything I did was music oriented until, you know, you plop out some kids and then, you know, what the hell's music?
You get a speaker. That's what happens. You have kids and you get a speaker.
Yeah, let me tell you what. You lose your mind a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
But which is why, you know, sometimes you need to pour yourself a drink and relax a little. That's all I'm saying. So you, King of Forms and Fabulous Fancy Rhymes, because I can do simple rhymes and monotetras, which to me are simple rhymes, but you are fanciful and fabulous. So, since you have to read and run, let's do your
I will put up on the board. Yeah. So, just a quick little brevity, Pretty Bird, a little piece of triple rhyme, as you do. And this is Pisky Spirits. And it goes a little bit like this. Rhyme can be subtle, yet within Russell Lost, as the verses bustle, if words sublime post. Crime rehearsed the question's tussle of cost, hustle when syllables climb as pens coast. Pieces can build with rhythm, skilled by line, like fleeces gain depth, milled grains imply. Creases onto paper filled with mystery pine, ceases if all spilled forget, why pass on by? Risky to start, if have to bend before the end, instead of risky, contend rationality by lens. Do you descend to whiskey, if words always tend? Pisky spirits craft on paper, find a friend's end poem.
You know, you are so fabulously fancy. Rhyme can be subtle, yet within Russell Lost. You know what? I absolutely get that because I'm not a big fan of writing, reading and listening to, yes, but writing like a lot of end rhymes, it's very hard not to fall into a kind of Dr. Seuss cadence because, you know, when you read 10,000 children's books to 10,000 children in your life, your mind just goes there.
Yep.
So, you know, it's unfortunate.
Yep.
But, you know, if I'm writing in a kind of more spoken word fashion, whatever, I tend to throw that kind of subtle little rhyme in the mix and that helps with flow and helps with whatever. And I like that because most people don't think of rhyme as subtle because it tends to be very kind of, you know, end line punctuation. So I kind of love how you start off with that. And I'm loving this whole scribe feeling. I mean, it's almost like this is the verbal equivalent of that picture, the one that I put up with the quill and the leather notebook and the glass of whiskey. And I mean, it just feels like that, and which is fabulous, fabulous. You know, I like do descend to whiskey if words always, you know what, that's hysterical to me, you know, because you can find inspiration and you lose your inhibitions and, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of, soothing liquid calm to be able to have that ink flow or to have those words flow or the creativity just do what it does. And I love that. I absolutely love that. So Raconteur, what are your thoughts?
My mind goes to Hemingway because he was a notorious, drunk, for lack of a better word. But, it's just in the beginning when you say, rhyme can be subtle, anytime I have anything that has to do with memory or memory mnemonics and things like that, rhyming always helps me to remember things too. Subtle or not, that there's something psychological about the way the cadence, or in my muddled brain, it conforms to something outside of it, I guess, and I'm able to hang on to it easier or better because like trying to memorize something. If you know it's going to rhyme and you have the gist of what the story is, you don't have to memorize it word for word exactly. You kind of know what's coming. And I love that. And I always love when someone's like reading a poem and they say something and you pick up the cadence and you can almost guess what the next hook is going to be, but not when you throw in a three rhyme per line thing. It's like, okay, now you're getting a little too fancy for your own good. But it's beautiful to listen to. It's definitely a work of art. Very enjoyable. Well done.
Thank you.
And if I may, Mr. King of Double Entendres, I love your title. And while I'm not a big, I don't know a whole lot of impish fairies and whatnot, I love how you've got this fairy and that spirit and all together and fabulous because, liquid spirits and whatnot. So you are just all kinds of clever. And it almost feels to me like an old-fashioned genius, because a genius used to be your muse. It didn't used to be a level of intelligence way back when, that they're like, well, how'd you come up with that? Oh, that's just my genius. Being that it was something outside yourself that the gods gifted you. And that kind of feels like that's what that is, with the little impish, and I'm finger quoting spirits because it's got that double meaning. And I love that. I just absolutely love that because there is no doubt in my mind that all of that is intentional because it's you and you're fabulous. So, Miss Sky, I don't even think we said hello to you. So, hi, Sky. How are you?
It's okay. Hi.
You are not forgotten. I love you, Sky.
I know you do. It's fine. I thought this was brilliant. And I really liked how you brought in the prompt in the poem itself. I thought it was really cool, especially the pieces can build with rhythm skilled by line, like fleeces gain depth. That whole middle section, how you just were very clever in bringing in the whiskey and the rhyme. Like you just took the prompt and you mixed them together, and then you went on in a deeper way about writing and things like this, and I just really thought that was really clever and playful, actually, with the risky and the frisky, because you were rhyming all over the place. You weren't lying.
I was.
Because you're fabulous. I'm just saying. I love that you did that. I love that you brought a more complex version of rhyme, because that is not my wheelhouse. That takes too much, processing on my part, and I am a simple girl, which is why I do what I do, because I kind of puke it out there. It is what it is. I don't look at it again, then I forget that I wrote it. But you are very skilled at kind of twisting a line into whatever piece of beauty you so desire. So I am thrilled that you brought that tonight. Thank you so much.
A wordsmith.
Thank you. Pretty good. And if I could do a quick little plug for my show tomorrow with Deb and Hatter. We are on Mangoes, Pretty Bird. We are on Mangoes. And we have decided that we're going to read an epic poem every week. And the problem with that is while there are epic poems on Lantern, like Paul Revere's Ride, which is what we did last week, there are no epic poems on Mangoes. Go figure. I looked.
I looked hard. There are none. And so, given the absence of inspirational, huge written poems about mangoes, I have actually written an epic mango poem. It, of course, rhymes. It is based on the man from South River, and it is almost as long, God help me.
That's
almost.
Awesome.
Almost. Yeah. And so I'm going to read it tomorrow. Tune in, and of course, it's called, just listen to this a little carefully, The Man Goes from Castlereagh River. With apologies to Ben.
So, Little Pretty Bird Trivia, that is my all-time favorite fruit. They come in like 100 different varieties, and they are every color mm-hmm. of the sunset. And my mom knew mm-hmm. that I was pregnant with my second child, my third child, one of my children, because when I went to the house that she had in Vieques, which is a little island just to the southeast of mainland Puerto Rico, I was in awe of the mangoes. I saw nothing. I mean, she had me throwing sticks like a native person up into these mm-hmm. wild mango trees to knock mangoes down. Yep. And I was just eating them all over the place. Yep. They come in pink and purple and these colors
wow.
that literally mimic a sunset. And they're so beautiful. And they all have a different texture. And I am just in love with mangoes. There's a big old mango tree at my mom's house. There's mango trees all over the property over there. And I used to literally walk down the street stealing everybody's mangoes. And funny story, on that island, there are still wild horses. Now, they're Pasifina horses. They're all through the streets. They're a menace, but they're fabulous and beautiful, and they crap on everything. But they would scare the crap out of me because right at dawn, you hear all this rustling because the house is on the side of a mountain. They'd be squeezing through the side of the property to get to the mango trees that are further up. And if you've never seen a horse peel a mango, it is hysterical because they will bite
wow.
into it and shake their head just so and really, really fast so that it kind of peels the whole entire thing. And then they scrape it with
that's
their teeth because they don't eat the pit. I'm just like, I could watch them eat mangoes all day long. It was just
that's
like the
really
best thing.
Never seen that. Pretty.
Yeah. It's awesome. And so I am thrilled that is tomorrow night's prompt. I may have to actually put pen to paper. That is
yes,
fabulous.
Yes, yes. And as I said, the epic poem will be read, and it is epic. That's about 5.5 minutes, pretty much.
Well, that
it's
is
just
that's
under a thousand.
Fabulous, though, you know, because it is not easy to write a piece that is cohesive that long. So I am sure that it is as brilliant as anything you've written. So I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So we've got Deb Hatter and crew for the wonderful world of mangoes. And I'll catch everybody tomorrow night.
Awesome. I will see you there.
Okie dokie. Thanks, Pretty Bird. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Bye.
Bye.
The Mango Tango.
I am so excited. I love but because I was attacking all the mangoes like a fiend, my mom is like, are you pregnant? No, I'm not pregnant. Are you sure you're not pregnant? I'm not pregnant. I'm buying you a test because you're pregnant. And I was pregnant. I was like, damn it. I love my mom, you know, but she always had to be right. And I hate that she kind of almost always was, but I can't hate it too bad because I've inherited that unfortunate trait. Not that I'm always right, but sometimes I talk out of my butt because I don't know where the heck it comes from, and all of that butt wisdom is always true.
You thought you were wrong once, but you were mistaken.
There you go. Yeah, you know, that's funny because I never actually termed it butt wisdom, but that's so perfect that it will now be butt wisdom forever. So there you go, which is different than swamp ass, you know, which is my usual butt analogy. So...
You
crack
yourself.
I am not. That's funny. I am not drunk.
So
I swear I have had nothing
really
to drink.
Really high in vitamin A.
What's high in vitamin A? Mangoes?
Yeah.
Mangoes are fabulous. You know, this is going to sound wrong, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's true. Okay, so the mango variety, I don't know what the heck kind of mango variety it is in front of my mom's house. It's this big old tree. We've had it forever. It has little... little mangoes that fit in your fist. Like, they're just little singular serving uh-huh. mangoes. But they are hairy as, I was going to say my usual, but that's not appropriate for tonight. They are hairy, and meaning that they're smooth on the outside, but when you bite them, they're very fibrous, like the flesh of it. Super sweet, wonderfully juicy, excellent, excellent in a smoothie. It makes the best mango ice cream, but that jar will get stuck in your teeth. I'm like, why are they so stinking hairy? But you can't stop eating them because they're so good. I get excited about mangoes. You know, where I live, they don't have a whole lot of mangoes, and I'm an island girl, and there's no mangoes up here. It's fine. I'm not upset. So what I am going to do is I'm gonna pull in mine up. Pick A or B.
B.
All right. They're both in my favorite of all rhymes, which is saying something because I'm not a big rhymer. I mean, I do, I have, I can, but I am a free verse girl through and through. Poetic prose, free verse, whatever, willy-nilly. I don't want to have to think so much when I'm pouring out emotions because they just don't go hand in hand for me. But Burn Stanza, a.k.a. Standard Happy, is a old Scottish thing. Standard Happy is eons old. And then Robert Burns, shoot, I think that's his name, Robert Burns. Anyways, he used to write little frolicking pieces in this kind of rhyme, loose rhyme form. And it was all dialectal and kind of funny and quippy. I don't do funny and quippy, so it's just the way it rhymes. And I like this because it frolics very easily. It rolls very easily. It's just got a certain flow, kind of like a limerick has a certain flow. It just has a certain flow. So it's just read a certain way. And it's just my standard go-to because not everybody does it. And a little bit more trivia, because apparently I'm going to be talking a lot. The first time on AP that I entered an actual like contest with a rhyming contest, bring us your best rhyme. Well, I don't have a best rhyme, so I brought my favorite Burn Stanza rhyme for, what is it, the Indelible Poet, whatever the heck, where there's a series of stuff, and I got ripped to shreds because I didn't know how to rhyme. They don't know what the heck I was trying to do, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. So I had to give them, again, I send everybody to Harvard or Princeton or Yale.edu to their poetry department who give them some knowledge. And I'm like, well, this is this, also known as this. It's been around forever. And, you know, so maybe, you know, maybe you could reread it, and because she literally put me last on the list and told me I was crap not to bother with her contest. And I was just like, well, all right. I was like, and so now that you know it's a thing, you're not even going to bother to reread it. I don't need to be placed anywhere, but maybe for her own knowledge, she might have gained a little something, you know. And I wasn't even rude. I was all very, very nice, you know. And she's like, yeah. No, you're out. All right, well, I didn't ask to be in. I was just sharing some knowledge because you obviously don't know what all the rhyming types of stuff. Not that I know everything, but there is, again, way TMI. You know what? God forbid I ever show up to this show drunk because, yeah, that would be bad. Hold on a second. We have a surprise. Sweet Pea, what are you doing here? You're supposed to be having the time of your life.
I am having the time of my life, but we're driving to somewhere, and I thought, well, if I called, maybe I could read real quick.
Yes, you can. Yes, I will read after you. Which one do you want?
I don't know. I could read both if you don't mind me reading twice.
That's fine. So, but you want me to put Whiskey up?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I made Sweet cry today. Just saying.
Oh, what did you do?
You did make me cry, but she lashed me very well.
I'm this is what you have done to me. My mind is definitely not on a Friday night. So, and look at you go, Sky. We have ruined you.
I didn't do something until I got lasting. But she was all pumped up after beating people up, and she was a wild woman.
I wasn't beating people up. It was karate. Sparring.
He was violent, volatile.
She was doing her monk impersonation. It was a D&D night.
This is the one that doesn't rhyme, just so
that's
you know.
That's fine. But it's got whiskey, so you're good.
It kind of rhymes, but doesn't rhyme. So this is called Whiskey and Lavender. Shattered. I'm writing you about our blues song, the one in smoky gray tones. Can you hear the drone in the underbelly of my restless, achy bones? Do teardrops crystallize as a rat-a-tat-tat beats into the fog? I smelled like lavender and whiskey as you electrified the air from a turquoise guitar. In a painted pitch black, my ears like Cupid love stories as your voice filled the air. In stereo, we played that 45 round and round. And one day, somehow, that record cracked. We stopped dancing and never sashayed our way back. No tune has a melody. The piano keys are sharp. Rock just rolls over and growls, gravels, and grunts. Lonely as a country song, guzzled with beer. We shattered, we sang sour notes, just a hello and goodbye, baby. I miss our blues song, the one with the smoky gray tones. How you touched me slowly and kissed me in the hottest flame notes. Love, whiskey, and lavender, and home.
I kind of hate that this reminds me of a very specific person. Like, every piece of this just, well, which, by the way, is fabulous when you can write things that touch everybody else's memory. Fabulous is my word of the day because I must have said it 15 times already, and I'm sorry because I actually know more words, but it's fabulous. There's something about creative people, musicians especially, that just leans them towards sexy, even if they're not much to look at. So that whole, where is it? My ears bled Cupid love stories as your voice filled the air. They don't even have to sing. You know, there have been two voices in my entire life, too, that they, it's just like the Pied Piper. It's like Pepe Le Pew when he's following that cat and he's floating on the stink of her. Like, it's crazy how that works. And I love that you captured that whole kind of whirlwind thing in blues, which to me is always a saxophone. And it's just, which, you know, again, just reminds me of a person. And it's just lovely and melancholy and wonderful because, you know, somebody electrifies the air and you have those moments and it starts, you know, shattered. So you know this ain't going to be a happy piece. But then you get into those moments, those magnetic electric moments, and then there's the missing, the longing, the, you know, I will always remember you. And those are always the hardest, you know, because when a goodbye is horrible, it's a lot easier to walk away. But when the goodbye is still filled with emotion, it just always hurts, you know? So I love this, love this, love this, love this, love this. So Rack and Tour, please, your thoughts.
You know, there's something heart-wrenching about something like this. There's a depth to it that you know, is undeniable. I almost want to say it makes me think of Manic Mania, because you know, when you're, you know, that attack from highs, the highs that are so high, and you know, when it crashes, it's like, you know, epic. It's one of those things that, you know, that you shared, and, you know, that's like everything to lose. It's not like, you know, losing something, you know, almost insignificant. It's like losing a part of yourself. And, you know, your personality, your sense of commitment shows in the way that you give of yourself and the way that you love. And that comes out in this very much, you know, that you know, you hint at what you put into it and your sense of loss, but you don't bemoan it to the point that, you know, well, I'm not looking for anyone to feel sorry for me. I'm just saying, you know, and you say it plaintively, but, you know, beautifully. And that's what I love about this piece. Lovely.
Thank you, Rob.
And Sky.
Excellent.
I love the Pepe Palu, the Pepe Le Pew analogy. Anyway, this is a wonderful poem. I loved the musical aspect you brought to it, especially the rat-a-tat-tat beat sweeps into the fog. And I liked how you transitioned. I mean, I really, when people do rhyme, I am so not against people coming in and out of rhyme. I feel like if you force it, rather than just coming in and out of it fluidly, it's worse. Like, people should just do what they want to do. And if they want to do some lines, you know, not rhyme, and then some do it. Because it's all about the overall flow. So definitely, you can still categorize this as a just a rhyming poem. I especially like the section with the stereo, the 45 round and round. Because it reminded me of people in relationships kind of doing the same thing over and over again until the crack becomes too substantial and the break is just there and there's really no recovery. And going into the dancing, into the music, and using that as the underground, I mean, the foundation of your metaphor, really well done. And the grit and the stanza that's following that, well done.
Thank you,
Sasha.
For all you young listeners, 45s were vinyl records that you actually put on a turntable that spun around and were physical, that you could melt and warp and crack and.
And if you played that one song over and over and over, that needle would wear through. So there is that.
Yeah.
I'm not old, I swear. You know, sweet, I didn't realize that you brought two whiskeys. I'm like, sure, let's go ahead and put whiskey on the board, which fit, but I didn't realize it was both of them. So your second one is up whenever you are ready, my dear.
All right.
A double shot.
Hold on. I got to get back there. All right. This is Wild West Whiskey. It's a little more rhymy. Behind the splintered red barn doors, Mama kept her whiskey, her secrets, and her 12-gauge double-barreled shotgun. Her great-grandpappy's land belonged to her three sons, gun-carrying Wild West boys, Mama loving, Ma abiding, while drinking and playing a mean set of cards. Sunday, the boys kneeled and prayed, eating fried chicken, cornbread, and all the fixings, pitching in to help at the home front to keep Mama satisfied. Dust storms or thunder clouds, twisters, cowboys kept tending their lands, roping cattle, as worn hands and bodies still mend torn fences. Arguments ended at the end of Smith and Wesson, in a bucket of blood, showdown, a blue whistler shot silver streaks of lightning, one life. Justice rode out on horses with a mission. Life of the guilty ended by hanging, no questions. Bar doors swing open for time, for whiskey and card playing. End poem.
You know, so my mind is all up in the saloon with those doors that aren't real doors. They're just like those half-swinging shutter things that leave all the dust up in the place. But all the working ladies had the best dresses ever, the costumes with the corsets and the things and the whatever in their hair and then the big old floofy skirts and I'm just like, you know, yeah, I can see myself, you know, running all them ladies back in the old West because I'm never one to have to be under the thumb of any man. So there's that. I didn't just call myself a horse, fine. And so I love that this kind of
you call yourself a madam.
There you go. The queen of all whores. Yes, I that's fabulous. And so I love that you paint a mood. You paint a scene. And it is not just the saloon. It's the entire lifestyle. It is, you know, it's the you gotta love a lady with a handgun. Oh, my God, just tore up all my stuff because apparently she hates me. But I love that. I do. I love how you go through Sundays at church and you go through, you know, the family gatherings with all the Southern cooking and, you know, the law, the arguments. I love how it's justice, because that's just what it was. There wasn't any question about this, that, and the other thing. And this is just fabulous on all fronts. And Rack, if you could comment and then run the well, it's only Sky left, but, you know, not that it's only Sky, but I need to deal with my dog, so I'm going to mute myself. So take over for a hot minute, okay?
I got you back. Yeah, there was a series a while back on HBO, I think it was, called Deadwood, and this totally had me thinking about that. It was just, you know, life in a Western town. And, you know, you've got every aspect of it from, you know, the barn and mama and shotgun and, you know, the kids helping out around the house. And, you know, church was a big part of life. You know, there was no getting away from that. And, you know, it was all, it's very, very welcoming and old-timey and wonderfully told. You know, it's one of those things. It felt very familiar. You know, it's like you can, you know, more than envision it. It's like, you know, oh, I know someone that you know went through that, or you know, it wasn't that long ago. It feels like it was, you know, and people still, I'm sure, do that in you know, cattle country and things like that. You know, it's not that far removed from, you know, the modern days. It was just, you know, how people live their lives, and you know, again, you approach it in a way that's like, you know. Well, this is, you know, what you would expect, and you very much deliver something like that. That was absolutely good, gorgeous. I loved it.
Thank you.
And Sky, can you comment for Sweet?
Yeah, I loved the theatrics. You were like getting right in there on that accent. You're like my great grandpappy. I just really enjoyed it. And it's written like that too, right? So even if you weren't reading it out loud, because the way that you use the verbiage and the language with the fixins, somebody reading it to themselves, they would still have that quality of your the lilt of the voice because of the way that you wrote it. So that was cool. And I felt like I was watching a movie. I felt like people were toting guns, going to church, doing all this crazy dust storm stuff. I have to say, I haven't watched, like, a lot. I'm not a huge Western fan. It's not because I don't like them, but I don't really interact with that genre very often. But I was a fan of The Quick and the Dead. That was a good film. That's the only one I could think of right now. But I might be getting on board more if Freebird's starting up, you know, a madam place of business. Yeah, I thought this was just really well done, and like I said, you just really sink into it with the way that it's written and the details in it. Really well done.
Thank you, guys.
You're awesome.
And I'm going to go say goodnight and hang out with my husband.
Well, you have a fun date night, sweetheart. I'm glad that you were able to call in and share your fabulousness.
All right.
Have a drink on.
Bye.
I am so excited because she messaged me before the show saying, you know, that you know, surprise, happy made reservations. And she's like, so now I was like, the nerve of that man having, you know, wanting to take you out. And I'm so excited that she was able to call. My dog is still a menace.
And so we love the asthma dog. Fine.
Yep. Scratch that behind her jaw.
She's just tearing up all my stuff. So I'm gonna try to keep her here. Don't eat that. You know, I can see you, right? Can you stop your shenanigans? Stop. You know.
Yeah, she's mad that you mentioned Pepe Le Pew.
She, but yeah, you know, skunks and cats. Stop eating my.
Computer is where my crafts are, and so she is a bulldog, so she eats everything.
So I've got all these like little planks of wood to make all my signs, because I make all kinds of stuff. And she's just like, well, that's yummy. So I'm like, yeah, it's hard to pull splinters out of your tongue. What? I mean, I'm looking at you. It's fine.
Well, you know, you can be crafty. If you could be crafty, she could be crafty.
Mm-hmm, she's a menace. I mean, she's a beautiful woman.
That looks like
she's mulling
it over here. Yang, 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 yang.
And my dog who eats walls. Okay, so I'm going to put me back on the board so it's easy to find. And I'm going to go and read my first little bird and stanza piece. I'm exhausted chasing after this dog. I'm too old for this nonsense.
I thought it was from talking.
Well, you know, that too, but that has never stopped me. Okay, so this is At Your Own Behest in Burn Stanza. The second I turn to face my computer, she's got things in her mouth. No lie. See, what had happened was I went down south because my other niece just had a baby, her first, and so I was gone for a week. Me and my husband were gone for a week. And I kind of ran out without saying goodbye because she wants to follow me and break my heart. And so she has not been right since we got back. She's a little moody. She's acting out a wee bit. And my vet is like, she does not have separation anxiety. The hell she doesn't. She tears things up, and then she holds a grudge. You know what I mean? Of course she does. She's my dog. But okay. This is At Your Own Behest. Hold on a second. I just got a message. Or I think I just got a message. I thought I just got a message. I know I saw a message. Is it on the board? Oh, okay. Yes, it is. Because I was looking at my other messages. Okay. Because, you know, we're on air and I have no words. I mean, I do, but I had to, you know, respond because I am polite. Okay, this is At Your Own Behest. And it goes like this. Stereo speakers, 2x2, carving beats in a person who won't even try, so can't ever do. Why bother dreaming? Believing in everyone but you. Facade on the seeming. Begging in quiet side despair, beseeching to all who claim to care, showered in accolades to spare, so self-entitled. Whenever you're needed, you're never there, the truth unbridled. Drowning your demons in shadows noose, keeping guilt close and honesty loose, scaling off friends who serve no use when ego's bruised. Singing your lies, it's your only truth, standing accused. Sorry, my dog is tearing stuff up. Standing accused of feeding fairy tales to pain. Nothing to lose but hearts to gain. Knowing they'll trust you without refrain, the darkest prince. And their compliance breeds your disdain. Their hearts turn mince. Blind and deaf and muted down, buried in all of the denial that's found when bottles and glasses are upside down alone in the dark. Crying in silence, the saddest clown, reality is stark. Crying rivers unable to swim, singing in choirs of seraphim. Purity is gray, yet lighted within hypocrisy. Caught in the very web you spin, your bureaucracy. It's never too late to go to plan, turning frustration in idle hands, seeing a future and saying I can succeed on my own. Going back to where the dream began, you're never alone. And boom.
You know, I can't see somebody reading that and not noticing the rhyme in it. I mean, it's beautiful. And at this points, which I'm sure are, you know, part of the form that it feels to me like in a song when the tension builds and you get to that peak and then the release in the next line, you know, there's something about the way that, you know, it's composed that just lends itself to that type of storytelling almost. Yeah, you tell a lovely story with this. It's fantastic. I can't imagine, like I said, not noticing the cadence to it. I mean, it's just lyrical. It's lovely.
It's different when you hear it than if you've never heard a poem like that and look at the words, because it looks like a mess. But before you get comments, let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee. Hey, Deb, how you doing?
I'm okay. How you guys doing?
Awesome.
We're just settling in for happy hour.
Poor me too.
Yeah, we're getting comments on Pretty Bird's poem. She brought us a Burn stanza piece. I was going to ask Sky what she thought.
Yeah, the Robert Burns style. You know what I really like about this Pretty Bird is that I feel like you have, I mean, I know that you have a different wells that you can definitely pen from. But one of my favorite, and I think one of your most prominent, and one I think that you're most known for, if I might say, is spoken word. And I love that you were able to take this Robert Burns style and meld it with your spoken word style as to not lose yourself, that kind of like, and I say spoken word, but it's so much more because I said it before, you always pull in this grain of truth, this, not even a grain, I mean, you pull things down and it always is very tangible and very true to oneself, and it's just, you know, it's moving and giving, and you didn't lose it with this, and I really like that you were able to meld those two quite beautifully. And I really like the line, feeding the fairy tales to me, that was like the inner sanctum of this piece, because it's all about, you know, losing that those rose-colored glasses in youth and kind of being introduced to the reality of one's ideals and them kind of just falling apart in your hands. And the end, I think, was I'm still trying to figure out the end, because it's kind of like you can go down to, you know, it's never too late to go to plan turning frustration ideals into hands, and then going back to where the dreams began, you're never alone. I mean, you could I feel like you can be optimistic in that, saying, okay, let's start again. Or you could even be even more damning and kind of say, well, you're never alone. You can live in the mind of yourself and that non-reality. So I don't know which way you meant it, but I think you were being optimistic, but I like how you can actually read it either way. At least I can. So I thought that it was really well done.
Thank you. It was about as optimistic as I get. Notice it's like, you know, two lines of optimism, so that's what that looks like. It was read from a conversation that I had with one of my young friends. He's like literally 10 days older than like my oldest son, and hard-headed and stubborn, and I'm like, you did it to yourself, but he doesn't ever want to hear anything. So I was like, hey, I got a poem for you. So, you know. I'm not sneaky, it's fine. Oh, my goodness. So, Deb, I see that you have to read and run, so I put you on the board. Are you ready?
I'm ready, but I want to comment first, though.
Oh, sure.
Because I think that this is a really clever pattern that the stanzas. I don't think I've seen the style before, and I was really blown away by crying rivers unable to swim, singing in choirs of seraphim. I think that's absolutely brilliant. But like, it's sometimes harder to portray the emotion if there's any kind of sadness in it when you use rhyme, but you sure did it awesomely. And at the bottom there, it's never too late to go to plan burning frustration in idle hands. And I kind of feel like that burning frustration in idle hands can be seen in a whole bunch of different ways, but very, very cool. Enjoyed it. I got here about halfway through, so I got to hear you read most of it.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, because idle hands is the devil's playground, so that's where you get into trouble. You know, you can make things happen if, you know, you stop being an idiot. You know, so there's my little bit of wisdom cleverly, you know, hidden.
A lot of times you hear people joking about how idle hands or finding something to do with idle hands can lead to blindness. Ha ha ha. Couldn't read it.
Well, there is that.
Hey. All right. Now, this is called Meet the Whiskey Moon by the Emerald Sea. And here we go. Yellow-breasted chats sing from elm trees, with whistles blowing on the evening breeze, spreading brine cologne off warm tropical seas. As whiskey hues stain misveiling the moon, big blood red roses in the garden bloom, coating air with their sweet rose petal perfume. Clouds rotate and then cool the warm night air. The ocean gusts whip my brown curly hair. Then hazel eyes look to the skies and stare. Male nighthawks fly and court all females, preening nasal calls as brown feathered wings sail. Those wings are striped light shades of caramel. Standing up on amber sands that cover hills, on breeding grounds for all the male, for all the mating whippoorwills, listening to bird songs as a feathered male bird trills. Now out from the beach shadows you waltz over to me, and we walk up to the bungalow by the opaque sea that sits wrapped in ornamental marbled ivy. End poem.
You know, as you know, I too am a water baby, and all things happy are ocean scented and fabulous, and so I love this. So I have to say, when you started with yellow breasted, my mind went full on Pluto to yellow bellied, lily livered, you know, and which just for a split second, which just made me smile, you know. But I love this, and you're naming all these birds, and here we have the Chuck Wills widow, which is just will not shut the heck up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I swear to you, it's like it sounds like a little howler monkey in little short bursts of but let's just scare the crap out of you when it's outside your window. It's fun. But, you know, you make all these birds sound so fabulous because it's the season, and it almost reads like, you know, when all the birds help Cinderella, you know, like all is just fabulous and there's love in the air and it's all kind of riding that ocean breeze, which not for nothing kind of makes everything a little sexier than it would be if the ocean breeze wasn't there. And so I kind of love that that's what it did to me visually speaking. You know, it very much was romantic and fabulous. And I like the gentle suggestion at the end of, you know, now we're going to go back here. It reminds me of, you know, then they lived happily ever after, but, you know, with a more sultry suggestion, which I absolutely love. So that is fabulous. And it even says at the bottom, which I just noticed, it's fairy tale jeans, but it's exactly what it felt like. So how perfect is that? So, Brad, what are your thoughts?
Thank you.
Bird. And glom onto that, you know, that was lovely, and then, you know, each different type of bird and everything, you know, it makes you want to, like, go out to, I forget what the site is, but they have, you know, recordings of each of these birds so that you could hear what they actually sound like, so that howler monkey bird that you mentioned, you could actually go out and like, you know, have a clip of that, and be like, oh, that's what she's talking about. And I love things like that send me to borrow a phrase from Sky, down the tubes, and you know, do a little research and you know, add some texture and background to what it is that you're writing about. I mean, you get the gist of it, and it stands on its own. But you know, when you go for that extra little bit, you know, it makes it come alive that much more. And you know, I love, you know, all the the happiness in this, and like, you know, Pretty Bird mentioned, you know, you get visions of the birds helping out Snow White and you know, just being fabulous and you know, entertaining and interactive. This is a lovely piece.
Thank you so much, Rackenthor.
And Sky, your thoughts?
Yes, I love the mix of the garden type woodsy feel from the birds, and as you said, it was a wonderful tale. For me, my favorite part And the part I really loved was your incorporation of the birds. I know that it's been touched upon, but the detail of the wings, I don't know, I just love how you just leapt with that. Like, a lot of the meat in this was description. I mean, there was a little bit of the telling in the beginning and a little bit of the telling in the end, but, you know, within its structure, there was mostly just the description of the birds. And I just really loved that. I just loved how you brought in and how you the trills, the hills, whippoorwills, and bird trills were my favorite catch lines. And I love that stanza because I just love the words whippoorwills and trills in general. But the description that you brought in and how you honed in on the wings and the nighthawks. Yeah, I just really love that you focused in on that and how you were able to sandwich that storyline in, but really the wealth of the poem was the description of the birds, but you still were able to carry it through to the end and kind of envelope it with the end of your story. I thought that was really cool, really well done.
Thank you, Sky. Awesome comment, everyone.
Well, I'm glad that you're able to call in. Do you have a minute, or I know you said you have to read and run. So do you need to go now, or do you have a minute?
Yeah, no, I'm going to head out, but I just want to make sure to contribute to the show. But
I appreciate that.
You guys have fun and take care and love and respect.
Love and respect. Thanks for writing for us. And I am going to put the first one by Raconteur on the board. Now, Miss Sky, I'm just going to tell you flat out, I'm saving you for the end because you always blow me away, and it's just not fair to put somebody after you. But if you have a second one, then...
I put four out there, man. How's at it? I just threw you a bunch of stuff. You can just have fun. You don't have to read them all. But
did you throw them in my inbox?
No, I put them on. I edited my comment.
Oh, okay. So I have to refresh. All right. I was like, I could. Yeah. Oh, there they are. Oh, awesome. Okay. Oh, well, all right then.
And you don't have to read. We don't have to read everyone, but I just put them on there.
I sip your sunrise and taste your. Oh. These are all. When Dionysus, you know what? That's fabulous already. Yeah, you're killing me. I'm probably going to get through them all. So there you go. That's what happens. But right now I've got Rack on the board. And I'm going to start with I Dream of You. And he has a recording. So let me know when. Oh, it might be nice if I refresh my studio so I can actually see the list of stuff. Boy, I'm just not on top of things. You want to know why? Because my dog has started to already throw her water bowl up against the kitchen, so I'm just waiting for her to bring the ruckus in here. Yeah, it's a good thing she loves me. All right.
I think you need a dog sitter.
I think that I have children that ain't doing their job.
Oh, okay. That too.
And, well, because, okay, so recently, as in 2 days ago, my dog is short. You know, because she's a bulldog, so she's maybe 14 inches at the shoulder. Can't jump up on any gosh darn thing. When you throw something at her and she thinks she's jumping for it, her back paws maybe get a half inch off the ground and she thinks she did something. It's the funniest thinking thing. And she'll be all dramatic if she doesn't land on her feet like she fell off a mountain. It's hysterical. But the other day, my youngest was not paying any attention to her because he had climbed into bed and he's going to go to sleep. And she wasn't having it, so she was pacing back and forth and she had enough. And full on from four paws on the ground, jumped on his bed. And I was just like, oh, what is this? Mm. And so now, you know, in the middle of the night, he just, you know, wants to eat him in his sleep, which I think is hysterical, which is probably, I shouldn't laugh at it, but it's funny to me. Look, she's getting closer, chewing the loudness. Do you hear this? It's ridiculous. I love that dog. Okay, do you see the poem, I Dream of You by Raconteur? Do you have it, Sky?
Yes, I see. I have it.
Okay, here we go.
Dream of You by Raconteur. When you fall asleep, what will you dream? Castles and kings? echoes on the wind of songs the forest sings. Fly over the sea, float on the breeze, careless and free. My love, may you dream of beautiful things till the dawn of the day, bright and new. After the story's been read, rest your weary head, safe and warm, snuggled in bed. Time seems to slow the further we go as moonlight invades the room. When the journey ends, wake up and then dream it all over again. Wherever you go, I want you to know, when I dream of you. Darling, you make my dreams come true. End poem.
And I'm on the radio. Go take that away. Don't let her get it.
Sorry, because my dog's a menace and my kid here to come in here and grab the stuff that he took off of wherever it was. So, wherever you go, I want you to know when I dream of you. Darling, you are my dream come true. Wherever you go, you know what? I'm struggling for words, which is not like me. So I'm going to start with Sky, and then hopefully my voice will come back.
So I'm just a huge fan of that song, you know, dream, 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 dream. I love that song. And I'm a big fan of like 40s, like, slow jazz, bluesy jazz, and I just want Billie Holiday to sing this song to me because that's really what it's like, Rack and Tour. It reminds me of a song, just a beautiful lyrical piece, the way that it flows, and I could totally see it set behind that slow jazz blues instrument that, you know, I wouldn't say jazz, I don't know if that's the right one, but, you know, Billie Holiday, I just really would love it. When you say, my love, may you dream of beautiful things till the dawn of the day, bright and new. You know, I love when love poems aren't always centered on the one speaking, and they reach out and they show their appreciation and say, you know, I wish for you. You know, it's not all about you being in my dreams and me dreaming about you, which is beautiful as well, but it's not all about that. It's also, I want you to have a piece of happiness as well. And I think that when sometimes it's hard to see past ourselves, and when someone does in a relationship or in a piece like this, in a love poem, I think it shows their appreciation, their commitment, and I think a broader sense of love when you're able to say, you know, I want this for you as well. I want you, your happiness too. And it isn't all about me. And I like that you mentioned that as well. Really well done, Rick.
I fully concur. This is wonderfully romantic and selfless. And in that selflessness, there's both beauty and wistfulness. And that's where it threw me. Because it didn't throw me. It's just my words don't know where to land on either side of that because they're equal. And it's lovely because this almost wants to feel to me like a bedtime story where, you know, after the story's been read, rest your weary head. You know, when you fall asleep, you know, dream of all these fanciful, fabulous things, of all of the peace that you could muster. And I get a sense in that first half that it's almost like you're watching her sleep, you know? And then when you get to after the story's been read and you're safe, you know, time seems to slow, I'm both, as time goes on and you're by my side, and as time goes on and we're not together at the same time, which I find to be kind of magical that it kind of splits me down the middle that way when the words themselves are fairly innocent. And but there's, you know, when your journey ends, and I'm assuming that's the dream, but to me it also is whatever life she's living, whether it is here or there. And so there's a wistfulness that, you know, and through that, wherever you go, kind of reads to me like, you know, through space and time, not just, you know, on this realm, but others. And through all of that, whatever it is, whatever life, you know, happens on a past together or on a split future, it's still all the best, which is really just lovely. And it is, and it weighs to me. It's a heavy thing to me, not a heartbreaking hurt locker thing. It's just, so I'm going to say something. Mm-hmm. Because all my comments are all about me, because apparently I'm more narcissistic than I think I am. But it's like the perfect goodbye that you can't ask for anything better. And you know what I'm talking about, Rack, where it is the most beautiful thing, but it's still a goodbye. And with all the well wishes and all the this and all the that, it still weighs. And that's kind of what this feels like to me. But on the flip side of that, and equally as powerful, is, you know, that whole kind of growing old, because it doesn't necessarily, you know, it all it says is when your journey ends, not when our journey ends. And with that little distinction, it lends itself to, you know, her path could be right by your side the whole way, or not. And so I kind of love that whole growing old together thing, because I fully buy into the fairy tale and I believe in forever, because I'm a glutton for punishment. But, you know, if you don't believe it, ain't never going to work. So I believe in that. And I love the idea of that in this, you know, but again, it depends on the mood that the person reading this is in. And I find it quite interesting that it's an even split for me, because usually while I can see different things, I tend to land on one, and it is equal on both ends. And it's, I don't know what to do with that, because it weighs on both sides, you know? So awesomeness, awesomeness, awesomeness.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I told you I had words. I just needed a minute. Okay. Well, since you have four, which one do you want to read first?
I'll do it.
I don't know if my dog just crashed into something or if that's my son.
No.
I can either read in what I dropped in order, or you can pick which one you like the sound, or you can pick anyone.
Okay, let's go with Dionysus.
Okay. So I read this the other day, but I don't know why. I find it very funny, and I don't usually write funny poems, and I think I find it more funny than other people find it funny. I don't get a lot of laughs, but I really enjoyed it. All right. It's a little punny. Okay. When Dionysus and King Midas fell into their cups by Sky Darkholm. Upon visiting Phrygia, there was a wrath about the father of wine. He sat with Midas and Plutus, considering the passage of time. And since they could not decide to call upon the king of Elysium or the prisoner of Tartarus to chime, they continued without answer, but with each a swig and a boast full of pride. They were all a few cups in when the apples of Hera began to appear, blushes of sprightly sunsets with a gown of Hesperides and thick flowering hair. Dionysus turned to Midas. You mocked the gods. You've gone too far. In return, King Midas leapt. How I would not dare. Plucking one from its perch, Plutus said with a glare, these are not woven with a thread of Latin. How did you come to grow them here? And somewhere in the wind, a bout of jovial voices were faintly heard, as Chrysis turned to Anthea, mum's the word.
Oh, that's funny.
Okay. All right, good.
You know what it is, okay? I don't know that most people who will read this know all of the references to the gods and goddesses, and, you know, the drunkards and the this and the that and all the flowers and mom's the word, which is absolutely fabulous. You know, I have a soft spot for a more intellectual type of poetry that is not at all pretentious, because I don't do pretentious. Well, I may do pretentious, but I don't like to read pretentious. And this is not what this is. This is just you know stuff. And so now it's a story, you know, a piece of poetic prose. It's fabulous, with full dialogue and all the boastfulness of the gods. And I think that is absolutely hysterical, because it, you know, if you mum's the word, that is funny, because yeah, that is awesome. That is awesome. I'm loving this, loving this, loving this, loving this, loving this. So, Raccoon Boar. So, how what do you think of this Feast of the Gods?
Oh man, I just love the idea to begin with. It's absolutely stunning. It's hard, like you said, you know, words. I have them. I think I'm drunk on ambrosia. I don't know.
Thank you.
So I'm kind of really loving the let me get back to it. The because Chrysis, who is the personification of gold, and Midas, that everything he touches turns to gold. I am loving this, and I love the whole between Chrysis and Mum, with the whole chrysanthemum in my head, and I am every time I look at it, there's just more, and I am just loving it. Oh, look, you have a whole entire glossary. Look at
because
you go.
Because I was afraid people at work couldn't get it. I wrote it at work.
Look. You already put it. If I would have just read your author's notes.
So I wrote it at work. I was sitting there because my client, I worked so one day with my adults, and they were and the person I was working with was in their apartment, and they really wanted nothing to do with me. And we had done everything all day, so I was sitting at the common room table practicing writing with my left hand, because I do that. And I wrote this, and then I thought it was so funny, I shared it with my coworker. They're like, I don't get it. And I'm like, well, I think it's funny. And you're like, you're such a geek. I'm like, it's fine.
You're fabulous. This is awesome. This is, because, you know, I have a soft spot for Dionysus. I have a Dionysus poem that is orgies and drunkenness, and so that can't be here. But, you know, because I wrote to a picture, and the picture was, you know, one of those, like, ancient, like, actual paintings depicting, you know, whatever, you know, freaking Dionysus used to do. And he was very much, yeah, we're going to corrupt everybody. So it's all that. And I love that this is all playful, and this is all, you know, this is fabulous. This is just stinking fabulous. So excellent, 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 excellent. I am loving that, you know, because it's no small thing to have somebody that everything, first of all, how does he even drink anything if everything he touches turns to gold? I'm just saying that always perplexed me. But then to have that gold have its own personality is fabulous. You know, he's just over there just doing its thing. He's in his little minor god forum, just, you know, making the jokes. And it's fabulous. It's just fabulous. It's awesome. So you are among your people. You are good.
Pass the gold slug.
So, you know, I already read one burn stanza. I have another burn stanza in there, but I think I'm going to bring a whiskey just because why the hell not? You know, sometimes a girl, oh, I was going to say sometimes a girl needs three fingers, but then I stopped myself, but then I'm telling you that I stopped myself, so I should have just said it to begin with. Because my brain, it's not okay. I promise I haven't drank a single thing, not a single thing. If I ever show up drunk, you will know it, because it will be hysterical.
I went to a show drunk before. Well, a little tipsy. I did. I don't know if you remembered.
I remember
they one. Called her Blue here. They called her Blue here. We used to chat on FaceTime all the time. She's from Sweden. Mm-hmm. She's not on here anymore, but we used to chat all the time on FaceTime, and we were just all like I don't know, we were drinking together across the ocean, and then she was like, let's call into the show, and I'm like, let's not, and she's like, come on, I'm like, all right.
I remember not so long ago you were just a wee bit tipsy. You were like drinking on one of our shows.
Was I?
Oh yeah.
Maybe.
Not too long ago, maybe 6 months ago.
Okay, I believe you. Maybe
and,
I'm more of a
and you know and you were fine and then you were giggly and a little feisty and it was just the best thing ever.
I'm a happy drunk.
Oh, so, yeah, I was just telling Mac. I was like, full on loving life, loving the world, loving everybody. I don't care if I hate you for that moment. You are, you know, your eyes are gorgeous and you're amazing.
I believe it. I don't remember.
No, I just want a
but...
happy meal.
I believe it.
Okay, so I put my little non-rhyming whiskey poem up on the board. And this is, I need calamine lotion, 3 fingers of whiskey, and to remember not to talk to strangers. Now, as a real quick refresher for those that that didn't listen to the end of last night's show, we went into how to measure whiskey like a real drunkard, basically, because nowadays it's all, you know, shots and jiggers, but no, you know, you put your fingers on the side of the glass, like horizontally, and that's how you measure 1 finger, 2 fingers, 3 fingers. And it's best if the bartender has very fat fingers, because then you get the real drinks. So, you know, this is a hefty drink, you know, it's 3 fingers of whiskey is a thing. So those who don't know, now you do. So this is, I need calamine lotion, 3 fingers of whiskey, and to remember not to talk to strangers. And it goes like this. I hear your voice in strangers wearing your skin, falling into them just feel you. They remind me to breathe. The pieces you stole outweigh the ones I gave you. I don't miss them much. Scars itch until they tear neath the raking of my nails, proving I never did heal. If healing means I can't feel you, then bleeding is my only option. Can you still taste my trust on your ashen tongue? Sulfur and silver still taste like a bruised ego. It wouldn't have hurt if you didn't care. How was I supposed to know you lied? End poem.
You know, the idea of whiskey being intoxicating is embodied in a piece like this. That there's something about it that just is very encompassing. You know, you kind of fall into it, and there's I almost want to say the embodiment of what, you know, the drink is supposed to be. You know, it just kind of takes me there. But you know, you guys are sitting there saying how you're happy drunks. You know, I tend to be the same way. You know, I drink when I'm happy more than to be when I'm like miserable or whatever. You know, even though I write the exact opposite. It's like, you know, drowning your sorrows and things like that, because that's the way my mind kind of relates. So, you know, reality kind of goes out the window for me. But this is very real and very raw, and that's what I love about the way that you write. You know, you always touch me, and you know, this is no different. It's absolutely stunning.
Well, thank you.
And Sky.
Yeah, I could like, oh my gosh, I'm melting over here. They were the pieces you stole outweigh the ones you gave me. I don't miss them much. Oh my God. I mean. It literally just bears the soul. And by the way, the title of this, if I was just scrolling around anywhere, AP, anywhere, I would so click this title. I mean, it's amazing. But further, when you go into it, it's like, you know it's going to be brilliant, but you're not quite, you know, like, I don't really know what this is what's going to be about. But then you just go into this piece, and then all of a sudden, you like, there's no warm up. It's just guts you, really. And when you get down to, you know, can you still taste my trust on your ashen tongue? Oh my gosh, and then bringing in the sulfur and silver, and like a bruised ego. I mean, it's just every line is not wasted, and it's just sucker punch after sucker punch. And it's kind of like your heart's just kind of bleeding. And then the question. I love when you do that. You do that a lot. Sometimes you'll just throw in a question there, like at the end or in the middle, and it's like, I don't know. You just do that really, really well. I really love this one. It was going to go on my list.
Oh, thank you. List. You know, when people are going through shit, and by people I mean the subject, not me, when people are going through crap, and I tend to be the scapegoat because I see things that they don't ever want to show me. That too. And that's no lie. People read me, and that's all that I am to everybody. And I'm just like, I am the nicest person you ever want to meet. It's not my fault you screwed that up. And but you know, when they take things out on you, when people. And I'm gonna just say, guys, especially, there's something about testosterone when they are emotionally damaged at a younger age and they're kind of stuck, like, in their puberty, emotionally speaking, where they can be the most intelligent, fabulous person, they still, you know, everybody gets stuck at whatever age they had the trauma, you know, emotionally speaking, until they can work through that. But guys especially want to go back to just being mean. You know, girls are a little bit more cunning, and they will like sugarcoat their nonsense so that you think they're being nice, but then you think about it for 3 days and now you have no self-confidence because we're just miserable that way. Guys are very much lash out, and, you know, and this particular person, and now keep in mind, we were just friends. Literally said to me, I think that you think that I feel some kind of way that I don't. And I was just like, what the hell is that? You know? And then he got all like seriously hurt and offended and beside himself when I gave it right back to him. And hence the whole, well, how was I supposed to know you lied? You know? You said this, you know?
Yeah.
So it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate. But it's also why I don't write letters. I don't write letters to people. I purge my junk here. Because if I don't let this stuff out and I write down or, you know, all this stuff, because I don't sugarcoat things. I have no real filter, and I don't lie. So I would write it and write it and write it, and they would have it in black and white for the rest of their days, never to be denied. And not that I would deny it, but knowing from experience that I'm the idiot that screenshots all the best conversations and all the worst conversations, that I don't ever want to forget the joy or the pain. Because the second the new joy outlives or outweighs that old pain, it's easier to get hurt again, you know, by the same person. So I keep the good and the bad. The mediocre stuff, not so much, but I keep all the good and all the bad. And I didn't know that was weird until somebody accused me of stockpiling things to use against them. I was like, I don't bring anything to your attention. I use it to keep my own sanity, to remind myself that I can't fully trust you yet. You need to earn that back, you know?
Lest we forget, yes.
Yeah, and I don't want to forget anything. And my mind can't be trusted, especially since I had COVID and my brain's gone. So there's that. Literally never been the same for the last 2 years. Don't know what the hell happened to me. But but you guys are awesome, and I really, really appreciate that. I have a whole series. Mm-hmm. You know, you call me confessional, like in my style of poetry, which I had never contemplated before that. And this was years ago when you first said it. Because when you say confessional, I always think Sylvia Plath, which I am not. But I don't write, and every, you know, I feel like I have this conversation 16 times a day because I talk to Rack so much, and we touch on so many different things that everything always sounds familiar to me. But I'm going to say it. I have gotten in massive arguments with some of my closest people because I don't really, and it's not that I don't care about readers. I don't write to have readers, and if nobody wants to, if nobody reads a poem of mine, I'm going to write it anyway. It does not affect what I do, you know?
Yeah.
And, but everybody, like the majority of people are like, well, what's the purpose of writing if you don't want to be read? It's like, oh, I never said I don't want to be read. I like being read, you know, but I am not going to write thinking that somebody's going to read me. I write for myself. I write to purge my junk. I write as my own therapy. I write because I wake up in the morning and things just want to pour out of me. If I start putting parameters on writing, like I need it to be good enough for somebody to read, I will never write another word again. And people like feel like violently adamant, like they get mean telling me that I'm an idiot, I don't know what I'm doing, and why do I bother? And I'm like, you are not my friend, you're an idiot. You know, because that's just rude. People write for a million different reasons, you know, and maybe, you know, people write to be read, but I'm not one to go out and look for readers, put my stuff 4,000 different places. I write. And whoever reads me, if it touches them, then it was worth writing, even if it was one person. And if it helps me purge, well, then it's also worth writing, even if nobody reads it. And, you know, I started off saying something, and then I started talking, I forgot the point.
I think your point was that you know you write for yourself and not for your you know supposed readers, but you know it's kind of the opposite to me because you know that old adage about you know every pot has a lid, you know there's people that'll be drawn to what you write as opposed to you know the other people that have their own idea of what you're supposed to be writing, and it's that thing that they put on you. That kind of, I think, ruins it because, you know, you can never satisfy everybody. And they've got their own ideas of, you know, Hollywood and the way things are supposed to be. And, you know, you can't tell someone how it's supposed to be because, you know, that's not true to how you feel.
That's not how art works. That's
yeah,
just not
exactly.
How any kind of creativity works. But, yeah, I've never been one to consider anybody else when I write poetry because – my poetry or my words like that are my therapy. I love when it touches people. And some of the ones that I hate the most are the ones that are read most often, which I will never understand. But, you know, when they touch people, they touch people. Just like Sky, I know that sometimes it makes you a little bit uncomfortable when we go on it, like stupidly just gushing like we have no sense over some of the things that you write. But it is well earned. You know, because you have this really, you are like the opposite of me in that I am jagged and visceral. I will, you know, I will just lay you on the table, gut you, leave your guts there with the dog chewing on it and walk away like it didn't happen. And you're a lot more subtle. And at the end, you're still emotionally eviscerated, but it gets under your skin and it festers there until it comes up in your memories. And sometimes it's instant and sometimes it just lays there fighting all of your internal mechanisms that keep your mind safe and your heart safe, and it just gets in there until you have to face what it is that it touched, and then for like 2 seconds I'm like, I hate you, but I love you, you're fine. And so it's really amazing. I'm not subtle. I'm not subtle in real life. I'm not subtle in my world. I'm just not subtle. You know, I know, but I
am
my
bulldog. Not subtle. Like, that's what I think. I didn't want to interrupt you guys because you guys were having such a wonderful conversation, and I couldn't agree more with you. You should write for yourself, and I think when you start to worry about what other people are going to think, and having people to bounce off of is a wonderful thing. Having someone to read your poem and say and have constructive feedback is a wonderful thing in a trusting space and somebody who actually will give you good feedback. And I am not against any of those things, but at the end of the day, you have to be happy with your own work. And once you start worrying too much about the other end of it, you've now placed a barrier and a box around you, and you had mentioned that's not what art is, and you think about all those people and all those artists that were shunned in their day. They're like, oh, what are you doing right now? It's all what's the fad, right? Is this a fad now? Is this a fad now? This is this, you know, and that's why I like it's I will take your opinion into consideration and I will maybe read it how you think. And if I don't agree with it, that's it. I throw it out. Thank you for your you know, your opinion. But maybe I'll take a piece of that. Maybe I won't take any of it. Maybe I will take all of it. You know, but at the end of the day, it's your poetry. It's your work. And it should not read like anybody else's poetry. It's yours. And you said you consider confessional poetry like Sylvia Plath. I love Sylvia Plath. And hers is very, very confessional and very, like, I would say, like, when I read her, I just feel completely consumed. And that is also how I feel about your work, but you guys have completely different styles. And that's the beauty of poetry. That's the beauty of different people and different personalities and different skills. That's it. I don't know where I was going with that either. I agree with you guys.
I have a question about Sylvia Plath. She was autistic? Or ADHD, or what would currently be on the spectrum, but was who the heck knows what it was called way back when?
I'm not sure about that.
Because she writes like my son thinks. And my son is 100% on the spectrum. He's a pill, but he's fabulous. And I mean he's you know, if you don't know, you just think he's an idiot because he's got Asperger's, and Asperger's make assy people because they have no sense. They have no sense of their surroundings, no sense of other people's feelings, unless that's their focus. They literally have no sense. That kind of makes them assy. Or we'll just call them eccentric. It's fine. And but, you know, Asperger's makes assy people. Just easy to remember. If somebody is an idiot for no reason and they're not really arrogant, they're probably on the spectrum. And not that I'm saying everybody is like that, but my own personal experience with my son, who's got ADHD and autism spectrum disorder and mild Asperger's, yeah, I love him dearly, but no. And but when he starts talking about things, he's got that way of being slightly disconnected and fully in it at the same time. You know what I mean? There's just that feeling about it where it's both subjective and objective. It's both intense in thought and emotion, but slightly objective in writing style, like in word choice. And she reads very much like that to me sometimes. And so I was just wondering if, like, maybe you knew because you know more about her than I do. And and I think that it's amazing because, and you know, and while I love the term neurodivergent, I'm a big proponent just, you know, of the fact that there is no normal. There is no normal on any realm of anything. It's a very fluid thing that is defined by what is acceptable by society, by mainstream society at the time. And as you know, that fluctuates every 5 years. So there is no true normal. So having said that, the term neurodivergent, while I know it means A, B, and C, technically speaking, we are all somewhat divergent, and you know, whatever. My own thought. Apparently, I'm an asshole, but it's fine.
Go ahead. That's why they call it a spectrum, right?
Yeah,
and they call it a spectrum, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, when you think of going further back, and you think of people, you know, that are women are being put away and they say, oh, she has hysteria. And you think of these terms that are outdated now. And, you know, if someone was back then, I was diagnosed with depression, they weren't diagnosed with depression. It was a whole different thing. And it was treated differently. And I totally believe and totally think that having people who were on the spectrum back then being misdiagnosed or undiagnosed because it wasn't as, you know, people didn't understand it, you know, and
so they didn't know it was normal or, you know, or as prevalent.
Yeah. And I think that some people are like, oh, well, it's there's so many there it's more common now. Well, no. I don't think it's more common now. I think that people are addressing it more and are able to and have the tools. And working in that field, working with autistic adults and children and things like that as my job, now I'm in with a lot of the trauma cases because they keep putting me in that program.
Well,
I used to be more in you know, autism and varying degrees of disability, but now I'm thinking a lot of trauma cases. But I see that, and I see different spectrum. I live it in my home life, and I live it in my work life. And I totally think people are saying, "Oh, well, it's all over the place now." Well, it's not really. It was always like this. People just didn't know what was going on.
Well,
so
they took the shame out of
know.
It.
Could she be? Absolutely. You know, maybe.
Yeah.
So,
well, I have to say, I kind of really like autistic people because I can sit there and listen to my kid and all of his nerdy friends, and his little faction of nerdy friends is full on ADHD, can't keep their things straight for the life of them. And it's hysterical to watch them have 16 conversations amongst two people. It's fabulous. But if I ask any of them a straight line question, they will come at me in swirls and polka dots and 16 million stars and still land on the right answer. And I find that to be beautiful. It's almost like I can see it as a drawing and it looks like art to me. I can listen to them talk all gosh darn day, but I also know better than to expect them to get anything done, you know, with me, you know, having to remind them 16 times. But it's a beautiful thing. But, you know, you have to not have any expectations of anybody that you talk to. You can't expect people to react like you would or like how you think they should because, A, you're just going to be frustrated and let down. B, it's not realistic. And C, how then are you ever going to know anybody or let them shine to their strengths if you don't at least observe to find out what they are? You know, so, you know, because I didn't want to come off as being, you know,
It goes back to your point about being normal, too, because their normal isn't your normal.
Yeah.
It's normal is relative.
This is true.
I mean.
You know, but then so is reality. So, you know, gosh darn perspective.
There you go.
But you mentioned hysteria, and me being me, I cannot let that go. Because
it was a good album.
Wasn't it though? Like Def Leppard. But these women issues, I'm finger quoting women issues, had nothing to do with their mental state. It was just, you know, women have needs for Pete's sake, and men sometimes suck. And back then, you only serviced your wife to have children. Otherwise, that's what the other ladies were for. And it's an unfortunate time in history, but it is what it is. But that's also the same time where that depression were demons and they would drill holes in your brain. You know, trepanation was a thing to let those demons out, like that ever worked. I'm like, yes, let's just weed out your brain, put some big old holes in there, and just leave them open to, you know, with your dirty tools and hope you don't die. But, you know, if you died, it's because the demons got you, not because we drilled a hole in your head. It was a crazy, crazy time.
Yeah. I'm great.
Another little history lesson. You know, when you think of it, you know, doctors nowadays, you know, they are treated like they are the upper echelons of intelligence, but the background of medicine is horrific. It is unbelievably barbaric. It is sadistic and cruel. It is, I mean, what the heck? You know, I mean, there's one thing, if your leg gets shot all to bits and they have to cut it off, okay, well, okay, that has to happen. But you can only learn so much in autopsies and whatnot. And we're like, well, I can try doing this. We don't know what anesthesia is, so bite this board. We'll hold you down. Here's some whiskey. You know, because whiskey has many purposes. They pour it in your wounds. They pour it down your throat. Hopefully you won't feel the pain of me cutting you open in 15 million places. It's horrific. And it's why Frankenstein exists. And I love that. I love that galvanization was a thing. That was the newfound science. Well, you know, this person died and he touched some water that had, you know, some current in it. And all of a sudden he popped back to life because his heart started. So let's see if we could reanimate a human. And they spent a long time trying to do that. And now we have pacemakers. You know, I mean, it's just the best stories ever because they're horrible because they're true. And there's something fascinating about that because there is no way that, you know, all today's soft-sided society would ever let anything happen. I mean, they don't even want you to test on animals. And if it wasn't for animal testing, we would still be in the dark ages of medicine. Do I think that it's cruel? Yes. Do I think that sometimes, you know, it's necessary? Kind of. Because if you're killing the animals, you're not killing the people, and they only let you kill so many people before they stop letting you test the drugs, you know? And it's unfortunate. I don't condone, you know, vivisection and the cruelty of some of these experiments at all. But when it comes to medicines and things like that, I mean, mice or humans.
That's a slippery slope because, you know, the Germans were vilified for their logic of that. It's like, you know, the perfect way to test something is with twins when you have, you know, two identical, you know, things. That way you could test the results on one.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
We're not. I can't. That's a whole conversation of unfortunate atrocities that I can't. You know, we can touch on this and that. But those experiments were not okay.
Yeah, you're going down the road of, like, Dr. Mangala. Let's not do that. Let's not go there. All right?
So having said that, you are on the board, Sky.
All right. Your sunrise, and I chase you burnt at dusk by Sky Darkholm. You are a morningside New England chorus made of willow, maple pines and paper birch. The echo of steam train whistles in forests. Upon mountain ranges where lilac finch perch, you bloom in Hampshire roses and snowy pearls, laced in all granite seasons upon which I search. A scent that lingers in cinnamon stick swirls, as does mist to salt on burnt sienna rust, thereupon raspberry wilts of redwood curls. Alas, memory and grief do what they must, as I sip sunrise and taste you burnt at dusk and home. That's that one.
You know, your brevities are lovely. You know, not everybody can be that eloquent in so few words. And while I can write short, it ain't eloquent. So I'm loving this. I mean, I sip your sunrise. That just, even the beginning of that alone is just, that just sounds like love to me, you know? I sip you. But then, you know, you're tasting you burnt at dusk is well, I guess that's done, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of love that because that even has the arc of a story in it, and just your title, like, how do you do that? I love my titles, no lie. They're hysterical to me. But yours actually has kind of scope and flow and has that lovely curve of intention, which is a wonderful place to start. You know, you are a morningside New England chorus. You know what? That is all romance and swoony and fabulous. That is just lovely. The echo of steam train whistles and forth. You know, there's something about the word echo where it's almost like the feeling of when you go to like a musical concert and then it's over and you're back in your car, you haven't even left the arena, and you can still hear it and it's still vibrating in you. You still feel the energy of the crowd, and you're still hyped up that it was great, and you're equally empty because it's over and it's slowly fading, but still there, but it's no longer tangible, you know? And that's what that feels like, you know, like that. It's almost like they're riding that train away from you, and it's almost close enough to reach, but so far away and getting farther with every second. And that's a very distinct feeling. And you know, and then you go on to all the beautiful, all the you bloom in Hampshire roses and snowy pearls. How beautiful is that? Laced in all granite seasons upon which I search, which sounds to me like every time you're walking the pavement, every time you're down the sidewalk, every time you're in town, you're hoping to catch a glimpse. And I'm sure I'm wrong, but that's what that feels like to me. Not that you're actively searching, you're going there to look for everything, but, you know, doesn't hurt to keep an eye out, you know? And there is a loveliness in that kind of tentative hope. And I love that, a scent that lingers in cinnamon stick swirls, you know? And I see the cup of tea there in that picture. And I can see, because I like a cinnamon stick to stir my tea with because it's amazing. And I can see that wistfulness of remembrance in that, but there's something about aromas that bring you to places, that bring you to people, that bring you to certain times. And this speaks more of that to me than a lazy stirring of tea while being lost in your thoughts, though it could be that as well. But it's just, it's those little punctuations of time that you have no control over because your body makes connections in your brain through all of your senses. Like if I hear this song or that song, I am back in 1978 Puerto Rico, and I can remember that summer and what I was wearing the day I heard that song on the back dash of my grandfather's Nova of all freaking cars, looking out the window where at that time of year there's a full canopy that crosses the road, so it's all, you know, a dappled light, and the song was on the radio and the wind was blowing because there was no AC, and so all the windows were open and it was just lovely. And I don't remember anything else from that particular summer, but I remember that. And because it was just tied to that music, just like sometimes, or here's a little sad story. My mom passed 5 years ago, 18, 19, 20, 20, it'll be five years ago in, oh, well, shit. Well, it'll be 5 years ago in like 5 days. So that didn't catch me off guard. It's fine. I'm fine. It's fine. Anyway, it was like 6 or 7 months later, you know, maybe closer to a year, that I was cooking. I was cooking some Spanish food that I hadn't cooked in a while. And as soon as it started smelling like it was done, I lost my mind. And I was crying in my yellow rice. I was in all, you know, my just comfort food from my childhood. I was just like, you know, my kids were like, you want to make rice and beans? I'll make yellow rice. All right, whatever. And so I was cooking, and it had started before I got to the table, and everybody's eating, and I'm literally trying not to bawl with every bite because it tasted like my mom. And I didn't know how to convey that to them. And they're looking at me like, oh, what the heck is happening? I'm like, you guys are fine. You're fine. And I like literally took my food to cry in my own Kool-Aid in my room by myself. So it didn't make them uncomfortable. But it hits you different. And you can't control that. Then I was okay until it was almost done. And I knew it was going to get me. But then I tasted it. And it was all the memories, all the Thanksgivings, all the Christmases, all the my mother yelling and my father laughing and all of it, just all of it. Actually, it's my father yelling, my mother laughing, but whatever. And it gets you. without warning. And so when you say a scent that lingers in Cinnamon Stick Swirls, it's like it's connected to a moment, to a feeling, to a person. And I love that. I really, really do. So, you know, long-winded circular talk, but there you go. And so, so Raconteur, your thoughts.
Yeah, there's an insight to things like this that I want to say sometimes makes the writer feel uncomfortable, you know, not knowing a little bit about your personality and things like that. I know not everything is based on fact and whatnot, but still, the glimpse into how you see the world through your eyes and how, you know, when somebody reads something that you write, you know, sometimes they try and relate to it, especially when it has that kind of warm, fuzzy feeling. So that who doesn't want to be thought of like that? So when they read something like that and they know that it's coming from you and like that, it's like there's a sense of jealousy, a sense of, you know, depth to it that you know, you're very revealing and vulnerable when you do something like that. If your audience, your readers are able to see something like that in what you do, and you know you do that very well. You know, you connect to what you write in a sense that, you know, you're talking about cinnamon sticks and things like that, and you know, like Pretty Bird mentioned, you know, that there's probably a specific memory that's attached to that. But, you know, as someone that's reading it and you want to insert yourself into the story and be kind of involved in it and be like, you know, oh, you know, well, why doesn't anyone think of me like that? Or why can't she think of me like that? Or, you know, I wish, you know, she would think of me like that. And it creates that attachment that, you know, what's the word? The rabid fans. Oh my God! You know, it's like, you know, I know you even though I don't know you. You know, and people walk away with that sense of, you know, oh my God, you'd be, you know, even though they don't know you, they just know the experience that you were able to convey so eloquently on paper. It's like they take it to the extreme, and they're like, you know, uh oh. You know, stalker, no, back down, you know, but at the same time, you can't help but put it on paper because, you know, like Pretty Bird says too, and, you know, I'm always the same way in the sense of, you know, it has to come out. And it's, to me, it's a very rare thing that it's a happy occasion. You know, a lot of what I write about when you can tell that, you know, it's coming from a moment or a personal experience or whatever is a lot darker. When I write about happy things, it's like I live the happy things. I don't tend to put them on paper. So when you read something like that, it's very easy to become jealous or, you know, have that false attachment. Like, you know, oh, you know, I know her. You know, it's like you read it and you relate to it and you insert yourself into it and you want to be a part of it. And that could be scary but beautiful at the same time.
Thank you, Rick.
You know, since you went there, Rack, there have been people, you know, I was just like, you are preaching to the choir. People read me, and I'm sure they read you the same way because, you know, people get attached to things. People that often feel invisible in certain aspects or unheard when somebody, you know, touches on something that feels familiar, you know, of course they gravitate. We all do it. But I had a guy, nice guy, ended up being really, really nice. But he, like, you know, being a gold member, you can see stuff, would just read like these four poems, like over, like every other day, he would read them like five times, like in order. And I'm just like, and so, you know, things creep me out. I mean, if you're not going to write a comment, you know, don't stalk me. So I'm in the box because that's how I'm like, so, I see you like these four poems. And he's like, oh, if I'm honest, I'm like, oh crap, here it comes. He goes, you know, I never thought that there was another person that love that hard. And I just, I've never seen it. And I can't stop reading it because one day I need to find that. And I'm like, marry four kids, you know, because. You know, and but very nice guy, was never inappropriate, but I didn't expect that because I get, I'm not gentle or kind. When I love hard. It's all pain. It's not that it's all pain. It's all the possibility of pain, because when you love somebody with all that you are, there's always the possibility of pain. That's what being vulnerable is. And so yeah. Even the slightest little tiny thing that you wouldn't give a crap about if somebody else did it, when it is the person that you trust most, it guts you sometimes. And so I tend to write that because I keep the happy to myself. And most people are like, yeah, with your exaggeration or yeah, no. I'm sorry that you live in your plus or minus one, but I'm kind of an all or nothing kind of gal, you know, don't know what to tell you, but I get a lot of negativity because that's not what love looks like. I'm like, to you, and I move on. But to have, he was just like, it's amazing. I was just like, oh, well, nice to meet you too, because I, you know, it was just a rare thing to hear. But oh yeah, people are. People read me, and I tend to be sultry and dark, and so they either think I am quite literally a psychopath, or I get unfortunate images that I don't ask for. So, you know, people just don't have boundaries. It's not okay.
Eggplants.
Yeah. Yeah, a whole slew of them. Not okay. But I have you up on the board, Rack, so we can play your second one. Do you have it, Sky? Do you see it?
Yep, I'm here. I'm on it.
Okay.
Yes.
Here we go.
Insomnia by Raconteur. If only I could evict you from my dreams until I can wake with you next to me. But the thought of caressing your skin and feeling it ignite against mine prevents me from succumbing to slumber. Growing hunger to taste your lips haunts me, and the thought of tears in your eyes leaves me broken. The consequence of your absence leaves me aching, yearning to have you in my life. Through sunshine and storms, creating memories as our future together unfolds. Fools seek perfection, and I'm foolish enough to believe that you're perfect for me. Blind as I am, I can see things for what they are. Nothing can mask the beauty your soul radiates. There is no rest having everything I've sought just out of reach. Close the distance. Take my outstretched hand. Gaze into my soul. Let me seal our fate with our first kiss. End poem.
Okay, so before I start getting into the comments, we only have a few minutes left, and I want to make sure that while we're on air, you get to plug your show, Rack, for Tuesday.
The embroidery embellishment, the idea of, you know, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So hang out on Tuesday, and we'll elaborate on that.
Yep, check out the topic board. It's fabulous. Okay, so insomnia. First of all, the way you kind of whisper grow in the title kind of just sets the mood. I'm just putting that out there, which is, you know, I am not opposed to these things. This is why I like recordings or people reading, because I read things how I read things. And how I read things isn't necessarily how people meant to write things, you know. So I really like the inflection and things like that that you put into your recording. If only I could evict you from my dreams until I can wake with you next to me. But the thing is, if she's not on your mind and you're not thinking about her, then there's no push for that to be a reality. She's just another person. So, you know, a little invasion of slumber must happen when the feelings are there. It's just one of those things. They go hand in hand. I am loving the consequence of your absence leaves me aching, because I love that phrase. I love that phrase. I love that phrase. I have a poem entitled "The Consequence of Your Absence on My Soul," which I love, because people don't usually see things that way. You know, like, people leave and people aren't there and there's a void or an emptiness or whatever, but the ones that are no longer there don't think about it. It is, they don't think of it as the result of them leaving. They go for whatever reason they have to go. Their life takes them down another path, whatever the heck it is, without ever considering what's left in their wake. And so I love that it's phrased as a consequence, which I love that, because it's a little bit more delicate and yet weighs very, very, very starkly. This is a little stalkerish in the yearning and you know, just a little bit. because where is it? Where was it? There's no rest, having everything I've sought just out of reach, closer to take my hand, gaze into my... Okay, this is all loving at a distance, you know, and you're it's that whole "you're perfect for me and I can't get you off my mind and you're just out of reach and you know, if you would only just kiss me that one time, we would know. And while the truth is, that's kind of how things happen. You know, it's either an instant thing, or you see somebody and you're like, oh, well, I would like to get to know them. And then that's where, you know, you think about things and, you know, you turn left instead of right because, you know, they're going to take that way up the stairs. And that's just how these things work. But being inundated with serial killers as of late, because Jay's been writing a lot of serial killers, and they have a show coming up on, I don't remember what Sunday it is, I think it's the first Sunday in October, all about serial killers, which, you know, it kind of, everything kind of seems a little bit more sinister, you know? But I love this yearning to have you in my life through sunshine and storms. It almost reminds me of the whole beginning premise of Boxing Helena. I must have you, I must have you. Oh. And yeah, I know, right? I'm not cringy, it's fine. But this is beautiful in its longing and beautiful in its romanticism. But it's a little stalkerish. I'm just saying, it must be my mindset, because I'm a little broken. So, Sky, now that I've ruined it for you, what are your thoughts?
Oh, my God, now I can't stop thinking of that movie. And I'm super paranoid all the time, right? Okay, so reset just a little bit. This is so sad, because there's this longing. It's sad because it's like you have this belief and you have this longing, but then even when you're reading the poem, it's kind of like, you know, when you're reading that the speaker is, they know that it's out of reach, exactly what Pretty Bird had said, it's out of reach. And where you really get into that self-doubting is the fools seek perfection, and I'm foolish enough to believe that you are perfect for me. You know, there's that doubt. I mean, this is not like a pure longing love. Give me, you know, this is what I believe in. It also strings in all those self-doubts. And to be honest with you, I don't think there's many things in one's mind that self-doubt doesn't trickle into, because we're all broken, I think, Pretty Bird. So I think self-doubt does trickle in. And when you start to see that trickle in to this poem, I think that's the point in which it really starts to gut the listener or the reader. Because,
You know, you can have this passionate, yearning poem, and it could have one feeling. But then when you start bringing in that doubt and that this is an imperfection, you know, this is not a perfect situation. This is something that is not grasped, you know, you can't grasp. It turns the wheels of that emotion. And when you say blind as I am, I can see things for what they are, like that realism. You know, you've taken us on this fantasy. And on this is what I have burning. And then you bring us down to the reality of it. And I think that is the part in which the poem turns and it becomes a bit sadder and a bit deeper and kind of saying, okay, well, this is where fantasy meets reality. And I think that every person has had that experience in one way or another, has had their fantasy darkened by reality and whichever way that they experience that. And because that is a known emotion when reading this, it's that same emotion but in different context, in the context of the speaker. And I just thought it's really well done.
Thanks, Scott.
And thank you. And no boxing, Helena.
No.
I am going to.
Why Ty doesn't date.
you know, technically speaking, she went to a party. She wasn't dating anybody, so I don't mean to ruin your social life.
That's true. I don't have a social life, so it's fine.
We are a little bit past time, but I wanted to read you this last one because I might be... I might be mistaken, but I think that this is the one that Sweet threw me under the bus, that I wasn't supposed to read this. I wrote this for one of her shows before, and this is the first time I had called in. She had let me call in because I had so much anxiety. She had let me call in and stay on mute and just listen to a couple of shows, and then she's like, well, you can try reading, and there was somebody dropped one to be read that was literally like six lines long. So I said, okay, I'll read that one. And then she's like, okay, you're up next. And I said, okay. And she didn't tell anybody that I was on. And she puts this one on, which is mine, and it was freaking long. And she didn't tell anybody that I was reading. So I had to be perfect because I thought it was a recording. Talk about stinking pressure. So I'm going to go ahead and put this on. Because, you know, when I get thrown under the bus, I get run over pretty gosh darn good. And I know that I was going to end with you, and I still want to, but I kind of got sidetracked with the fact that I forgot that this was that thing. So it's a little nostalgic for me.
I prefer ending with you. I can bring my other poems to any other show. I'd rather end with you. That's what I prefer. So great.
Well, okay then. this is Moon Cycle, Mood Swings, and Whatever Suits Your Fancy in Vern Stanza, because, of course, okay. Keep in mind, I was nervous, had so much anxiety, was barely recording my stuff for, you know, however many months, and she just stuck me on the phone with 15 people. It was a very busy night. It's fine. Okay.
I was there.
Yeah. So then you know. We can ponder life on Moonlight Pond, contemplating life beyond the images that twilight dawned across the water. Sun gods hold dreams. Now I can't even read. Now this is worse than when I read it live the first time. I'm going to put on my glasses because it's late and my eyes are tired. Oh, that's so much better. Okay, I'm going to start over. We can ponder life on Moonlight Pond, contemplating life beyond the images that twilight dawned across the water. Sun gods hold dreams they abscond from sons and daughters. Magnetic poles in many tones, cycles guide the girls alone. All inclusive axioms guide writer's hand. Melancholy can bemoan the moon's command. Lovely lady, goddess be, running wild and laughing free, in romance for eternity, the lunar queen, lapping shores contentedly in joys unseen. Though pulling oceans day and night to wrangle seas begs quite a fight, and strength of man embodied right, the god prevails. In gentle orbs of glowing light, a kiss unveiled.
In this land of single gods, the moon has always garnered laud, and backyard dreams are those abroad, its mood specific. Whimsy breeds in people awed and hopes prolific. So whether gentle guidance be, or Titan soothes the angry sea, romance flames in urgency on either side. A pen bleeds light eternally in hopeful cries. So whoever's shining, serene or sign, will carry every feeling mine and offer it to thee and thine across the land. The moon breeds whimsy down the line, woman or man. End poem. And I wrote that for Sweet's Battle of the Moon and Sun.
That's how you use thee and thine. I mean, you know, you hear people throw the words around and they don't necessarily fit, but that was absolutely perfect. And then in the beginning, you've got abscond hidden in there, absconding with somebody's dreams. That's also a lovely thought, which, you know, you always do. And I mean, the overall piece is you know, it is a definite sad note to it, but I mean, kind of fall into it at the same time. I don't know. You really just have a way of setting a mood, whether it's Burn Stanza or, you know, anything else. The bane of your writing is even your sonnets. I just love this.
Thank you.
What'd you think?
Well, this is gorgeous, and I think not only does it fit the burnt style, but it also lends to the love of the gods, right? Because you're bringing it here. So I love that the way you went with it. And when I was reading it, when you got to one stanza, I was like, oh, this is my favorite stanza. And then by the time I got to the end of the poem, I seen I had put a comment there. It was the same exact stanza that I said before, which is really funny. But so let me just, there's a couple things I just wanted to really tell you that I really liked was the lovely lady goddess be running wild and laughing free. I love the personification of the moon, how you give her such, you know, you take the moon and then you personify it, and then you bring in the goddess of the moon, and I just love how you garnered her with this laughing free and this romance and you know, when people start talking, oh, it was a moonlit dinner and all these things and built of romance, and that is because it does have that ambiance. So you brought that in there, and then you also brought in the pulling of the ocean tides. So like you were touching on all these bits of where the moon comes into ourselves and our daily routines and what that means to us. Like when we think of, the moon, but it's romantic, it pulls the tides and all these things, and it's strong. I mean, in the strength embedded, right? The god prevails. I mean, it is a force to be reckoned with. So you're bringing in this gentleness, this sereneness, and yet you're bringing in the strength, which I really, really loved. And then when you go down to, this was my favorite stanza, and this land of single gods, the moon is always garnered laud. I really just love, I don't know why, I just really loved it. There's like no rhyme or reason. I think it was just the way that it was written, and I just really love that part. But then also, I like how you didn't mention Selene until the end. And so whoever's shining, Selene has been, I really liked how you didn't bring her into the end and you kind of just came out with that bang and that kind of like push and pull. I just thought it was really well done. And I remember the first time we read it and I loved it the second.
Well, thank you. And it is Sign, who is a moon god. Well, Selene is moon goddess. Sign is a Mesopotamian moon god. And so it doesn't matter which faction of moon god it is, you know.
Stovetop.
See, I don't know. I don't know that one. Now, so what is that from? What? Not Greek. You said not Greek?
No, it's not Greek.
Mesopotamian?
It's a Mesopotamian.
Okay. See, I'm familiar with my Greek, but not so much, and maybe a little bit Roman, and maybe a little bit Norse, but not Mesopotamian. So now I'm going to have to go figure
well,
that out.
Well, I have
go
this thing. Everybody is Selene and Luna, and I'm like, you know what? It's a guy, you know? I'm like, it's so many times for me the moon is a guy. So I was looking for a moon god, and I was like, I love that it looks like Sin. It's signed, but I love that it looks like Sin. And so I was like, that's my guy right there. Because sometimes
yeah.
the moon is wonderfully wistful, but when the moon is run by a guy who is all about the tides and being in control, it's different than being a bitchy moon goddess, you know, who you know sets everything askew with the tides and the this and the that. It's less moody when it's a guy and a little bit more controlled. And there's something about it still being romantic that weighs different for me. It's like there is a line in male poems, male authored poems, that there's a line that between being super, super mushy with no backbone and being self-aware and sensitive enough that it weighs more than your standard woman that's free with her emotions. And I know that it's a double-edged sword. I know that it ain't right, but it still is. You know, it is what it is, where women are more free with their emotions on a more regular basis. So it just doesn't weigh the same as when a guy is level-headed and able to articulate the depth of feeling. It just weighs a little different for me, you know, and maybe because that's my own personal experience where guys tend to want to play football, punch a punching bag and run rather than have to deal with their own shit, you know, and I know it sounds stereotypical, but that doesn't mean that it's not true, you know, and so I like the idea of a moon god that can be as gentle as it is demanding. And it's a nice balance to Selene, which I will always prefer Selene to Luna as far as the name of a moon. And I don't know why. And now more so because I have a little 5-month-old baby niece whose name is Selene. And they call her Selene Beanie, so she's Beanie. And she's just the cutest thing ever on the face of the planet. So now I am partial to Selene. But I like signs. You know,
yeah.
I can't stop talking.
I was Googling it, and it's like comes from Sumerian and Akkadian. That's cool. Yeah. I don't know too much about that, so I was just clicking stuff.
I love how in that religion, whatever religion that is, that I can have no stinking clue, it is. It's the moon that births the sun, you know, and because he's the father of the sun god, and I love that. I love that not as much as I love thinking Nyx and Erebus, and that the children of the night and darkness are the sun, are daylight and slumber and all of this stuff, and the only way that for her child to thrive is if she spends those 12 hours a day that daylight is shining in Hades. She literally trades her daughter's life for time in hell. And I just find that to be beautiful, that all that darkness can birth all the best things, and that as a mother, she gives up half her life for her child every day. And I love that story. So Nyx is my goddess of choice on all fronts. So, you know, and again, I can't stop talking. So we are like 17 minutes past our time. So we should probably say goodnight. But I love this conversation, and I tend to like smaller groups than and a really, really full show of poetry where you don't really get to have side conversations, because this is where the fun is for me. All the little tiny little blurbs and this and that and the insights and all the side conversations that have nothing to do with anything, that's the best part of it, because that's what home feels like. That's what comfort feels like. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to be able to talk on, you know, things from autism to, you know, kidnapping a girl and chopping off all her body parts, you know, because if you haven't seen the movie Box and Helena, go watch it. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful flow of conversation where it's a little bit of hysteria, some galvanization, some unfortunate experiments on humans, and oh yeah, there's some poetry, and a whole lot of whiskey. So, you know, so this is like the best thing ever. So thank you, Sky, for hanging out with us the whole night. It was an unexpected pleasure. Well, your company is always a pleasure, but I always feel like it's a treat because I so seldom get to share time with you. So yay. It's like Christmas.
Thank you.
And Rat, thank you.
Why?
No, you're fine.
I was just going to say, it's going to be Christmas soon because my book's off to the publisher.
So, like a publisher? Like you're being published? Or like?
Yeah. 75 grueling poems that I had to submit myself to try to think that, okay, this is 75 poems. And this is the order that they should be in, and this is what I think should go in. 75 torturous poems later, 3 sections, it's off to the publisher.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I have tried with both KDP and Lulu. I prefer Lulu because formatting on Amazon sucks. And I actually have one. I posted it up on my thing. I have 2 more much smaller little chapbooks that are on there. Well, I guess only one of them is on there. I didn't put the other one on there yet. So I tend to never mention anything. But I'm so excited. So you have to send me the link when it's up so I can buy it.
You are going to buy it. I'm going to send it to you. I'm not going to send it to everybody, but I'm going to send you that in a painting of the ocean. Get a P.O. box.
You're awesome. Oh, this has been a very, very fun night. And Raconteur, thank you for doing this with me because you're fabulous and you are hysterical. And I love your insight. So thank you.
And thank you for making me look good.
Well, you guys are great, and until next time, I was going to say goodbye in French, but my French accent sucks, so I'm just going to say goodnight.
Au revoir.
Yeah, well, I was going to say adieu, but, you know, yeah. Either way, what like, is one goodbye and one goodnight?
I don't know.
One farewell and one goodbye, because isn't goodnight?
I don't even know if that's right, what I said.
Listen, I'm good with Spanish.
Adios,
French,
yeah,
not so much.
Or goodbye until we meet again. Or,
oh, there you go.
Or, yeah.
So then what's the other one? You know what? I'm good. I'm fine. I'm
going
to understand the nuances of French.
We're going down the tube again. Have a wonderful day.
Good night.
Bye.